Welcome to A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. I'm Mike Papali, and I'm the president and founder of In a Heartbeat, a nonprofit organization with a mission to prevent death from sudden cardiac arrest. I went into sudden cardiac arrest at age 17 and have been living with heart disease for over a decade. This podcast will dissect the physical and emotional obstacles of living with heart disease and how to overcome them. I am inviting you to join me on my personal journey of living as a heart disease patient. The ultimate goal of this podcast is to help heart disease patients of all ages live a long and normal life. Welcome everyone to the next episode of A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. A Big Heart is powered by In a Heartbeat. In a Heartbeat is a nonprofit organization with the mission to prevent death from sudden cardiac arrest. This is done by donating AEDs, providing CPR and AED training, raising money for research projects, providing support to patients, and offering free ECGs to children, teens, and young adults. To learn more about In a Heartbeat, visit www.inaheartbeat.org. All right, everybody, welcome back to another great episode of A Big Heart. We had a really exciting week this past week with our nonprofit In a Heartbeat. We hosted our first ever community ECG screening event. So we had about 200 kids between the ages of 10 and 19 come in and get a free ECG. We had three amazing doctors, two cardiologists, one electrophysiologist on hand reading all of the ECGs and meeting with families if there was something abnormal. Most of the ECGs were within normal limits. I will say we did have one that was abnormal that required some relatively immediate follow-up. So we got them in for a visit, and that is all being taken care of. And you never want to see that happen, but that truly is why we do it, to try to detect heart disease before somebody goes into cardiac arrest and find out if they have something. So we're really proud of that. And this week on A Big Heart, we have two really special guests. We have Betty Neal and Alan Himmelfarb from Starting Hearts, an incredible organization out of Colorado. They are doing amazing work. And we are going to hear Betty, who is a cardiac arrest survivor, and her story, her road to recovery, and how she's doing now. And we also talked to Alan, who has been personally impacted by sudden cardiac arrest in his family. And he is the CEO, the executive director of Starting Hearts. So without further ado, let's welcome on Betty Neal and Alan Himmelfarb. All right, now we bring on two very special guests. We have Betty Neal and Alan Himmelfarb from the Starting Hearts Foundation. Alan and Betty, thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us today.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah. So we have a really
thank you, cool... Mike. It's great to be here.
Yeah, definitely. So we have a really cool interview and conversation that we're going to have today, because we're going to hear some great inspirational stories, and then we're also going to talk about an amazing organization doing some amazing work. So Betty, I'm going to start with you. And could you just tell the listeners, you have an incredible story, and I'm not going to do it any justice. So I want you to tell everybody your personal cardiac arrest survival story.
Sure. Thank you, Mike. 3 years ago, this past April 9th, so April 9th, 2018, I was in my kitchen preparing some food, and I had a young lady living with me. I was 61 years old at the time. I had a young lady living with me kind of in a temporary basis. Her name was Tina, and Tina hadn't been there for a couple of weeks. She'd been staying with some friends, and came in on a Monday afternoon. I had just gotten back from a hike, and Tina came into the kitchen, and I greeted her and was super happy to see her. And she said she had just come home to pick up a few things and was going away, and for another couple of days. So I invited her to sit down with me and have a snack and a cup of tea. So she said, sure, let me just take this trash out and I'll be right back. So I continued my prep for our little snack, and Tina came back in and found me on the kitchen floor, face up, kind of under the table with my feet sticking out, and I knew right away what it was. And I was blue by that time. I had only been out, maybe under a minute. And that was my cardiac arrest.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. She was able to provide CPR.
Tina was 22 years old at the time and just jumped into action and initiated CPR. First, she called 911. Because she did not know really what the situation was with me, was a little hesitant to move me out from under the table in case I'd had a neck injury. Because I was preparing snacks, there was some suspicion that I maybe had choked. So Tina was very cautious, and I appreciate that. And she called 911 first before really laying hands on me. So immediately 911. And the 911 operator walked Tina through the horizontal Heimlich, did a sweep of my mouth, determined that there was really nothing. I wasn't choking. And Tina initiated CPR right away. And about 2 minutes after the initial call, Tina's initial call to 911, the police officers arrived. And 2 minutes after that, fire department came, each with their subsequently higher level of care. And within 6 minutes, our local paramedics were in my kitchen working on me.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it was a big, real big effort, big resuscitation effort. Paramedics intubated me in my driveway, and I was not alive when I left town. They administered medication into my jugular. I've had double knee replacement. They found to their surprise that they couldn't get a vein in my knees because of the knee replacement. I was pretty dehydrated. And now I understand that dehydration is often part of sudden cardiac arrest. So they couldn't get a vein in my wrists, couldn't get one in my knees. And so they went for the jugular. And administered an AED defib 6 times before they got me back.
Wow.
But then they did.
Yeah.
And they knew, you know, they knew what that they knew that it, when they got me back, they knew they got me back. Yeah. So we live, Alan and I live in a remote area in Colorado near the Vail ski area. Mm-hmm. And about 100 miles from Denver. And I was stabilized at our local hospital, Vail Health. And then the Flight for Life helicopter came in and swooped me out and ended up at Denver Health down in downtown Denver. And they put me in hypothermia therapy and for about 4 days and pulled me out. And all's well that ends well, I guess.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, just hearing your story, just learning a lot about the chain of survival and CPR and AEDs, a lot of things went really, really right. You know, with your roommate calling 911 immediately, which is, you know, the perfect thing to do, the quick administration of CPR, you know, the quick use of an AED and everything that happened from there. So it's a incredible story. I'm honored to have you on here with us today.
Thank you. I have, I owe my life to Tina and the first responders who, by the way, there were 11 of them on my team, 11 first responders, and they got a big award, through a local nonprofit organization because it was such a textbook, perfect life-saving effort.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm proud of them all.
They certainly deserve it.
Absolutely.
Cool. So Alan, I'm going to, kick it over to you now. So you're the chairman and CEO of Starting Hearts. I'd just be curious to hear kind of the story behind the organization first, and then what made you get involved?
Sure. So it's a pleasure to be here. And I just want to say Betty is such an inspiration in our community, such a love of life, and she really brings so much to us. So having that precious life saved means so very much. And in our case, in 2007, our founder, Lynn Blake, back from her honeymoon, age of 27, first week on the job, and she had a cardiac arrest right at her desk. Fortunately, a coworker knew how to do CPR, called 911. The Vail Fire Department arrived fairly quickly, and it took three shocks of a defibrillator to bring her back. So it can happen basically to anyone, anytime, anywhere. She had no preconditions that would have suggested that a cardiac arrest was on its way. It took several months to really recover. And in 2010, she decided to help others the way she had been helped by providing free education. And so began Starting Hearts, with the idea of doing a 45-minute class that would teach the basics, which she entitled Call Push Shock. And that class today, now 10 years later, has been taught to about 30,000 people in our area. I came to Starting Hearts in 2014. I'd had a prior career as an automotive industry consultant, and the trajectory of my life changed significantly when I was in college, when my father passed away from a cardiac arrest at the dinner table at the young age of 57. And in those days, we didn't have 911. We didn't have public access to defibrillators. My mother did breathing. I did CPR, and my younger brother ran out into the neighborhood to try to find a doctor. And of course, by the time the ambulance eventually arrived, we had lost him. So for me, this was really coming full circle, meeting Lynn, seeing the way it should be, a life saved rather than a life lost. And so I very much enjoyed jumping into the challenge to see if we could really improve outcomes by developing an infrastructure and training thousands and thousands of people to really be able to help in that moment of need. And Betty's Tina is a perfect example of a lay responder, a citizen responder who can take the very first, most important steps to keep a patient viable until the professionals arrive on scene. So as is the case quite often now, we discover that our prepared citizenry makes the difference between a life lost and a precious life saved. So today in our area, we have a save rate of approximately 30%, which is about three times the national average. And we're working to improve upon that year after year.
Well, that's it's amazing, Alan. You know, I'm you experienced something in your life, and I'm, you know, sorry that you had to experience something like that, because nobody should have to, you know, go through that situation. But, you know, coming from a cardiac arrest survivor, and I'm sure Betty feels the same way, the work that you're doing is giving people like myself an opportunity to have their life saved. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And again, I'm sorry that it had to, that it had to happen like the way it did for you. But it's very admirable what you're doing. So,
well, thank you.
So, so Betty, now, a lot of times we talk about cardiac arrest, and the survival rate is very low, which we know, which we just kind of talked about. But I think what's not talked about enough, and it's starting to more because the American Heart Association has just added a sixth link in the chain of survival, which is called recovery. But as you and I and many people know, it doesn't just end when you survive sudden cardiac arrest. So I'm curious to kind of hear, you know, what your, first of all, what your initial reaction was when, you know, a doctor said, hey, you suffered sudden cardiac arrest, and kind of what that, those next steps towards recovery look like.
I am very, very happy to hear that there's a new focus on recovery. I will admit mine was brutal. Some of it was, and I wasn't prepared for it being brutal. You asked what my reaction was. Well, you know, I woke up was brought out of hypothermia therapy, and some of my favorite people were in the room. My children were there. Both are grown adults. My youngest was at University of Colorado in college, and my oldest was living in Tampa at the time. And my brother and sister-in-law from Southern California were there, and I just kind of wondered what the party was all about. With some of my beloveds in the room, a couple of my closest friends, and then I learned what had happened. But my brain had taken a big hit, and I was very groggy. I couldn't remember anything from 1 minute to the next, so I really couldn't wrap my head around what had happened to me for a couple of days. And definitely, even though I know the difference between cardiac arrest and heart attack, I kind of kept going back to heart attack. I was very confused about it all. But that I had worked in an intensive care unit in a city near us as a speech language pathologist, and I knew I hoped that my encephalopathy, my brain fog, if you will, would clear. And it did. Took a couple of days, 24, 48 hours. And then I realized what had happened to me. And, mostly just shocked. And lots of tests, lots and lots of tests at the hospital at that time. And, as every test came back was perfect. No damage to my heart before my cardiac arrest, and no damage afterwards. So then that really left me with the big why. If there was, nothing apparent that had caused it, why me? And is it going to happen again? So I went through the process of recovery, was released home. One of my brothers, who's a physician, came with me and was with me at home during my recovery for that first week or 10 days. And, every day I got worse. That 10 days after my hospital release, I just got worse and worse. I felt worse and worse. I had such a deep, deep, deep racking cough. I thought my cough was going to kill me. Mm-hmm. And I just got to the point where I couldn't even lift myself off of the couch. And then I collapsed on about day 10 of after being home. And as it turned out, I had kind of bottomed out from blood pressure medication. And my blood pressure was very, very low. Luckily, I had a neighbor who basically walked in and saw me at that point, saw me collapsed and took me to the ER. So that was a real blow, because when I had left the hospital in Denver after my cardiac arrest, the doctors were like, "You're good. Your heart is strong. You just got to kind of get your strength back. You've got your ICD implant. Should you have sudden cardiac arrest again, you're good to go." And as it turned out, I wasn't. And I got really, really, really sick. Mm-hmm. So an astute nurse practitioner in the ER figured it out and basically yanked me off the blood pressure medication right away. And then I started to recover.
That's awesome. Awesome. And you said you have an implanted defibrillator?
I do. I do. Okay. I have an ICD.
Mm-hmm. And how's your experience with that been?
Zero, really. I haven't had any therapies. It hasn't shocked me at all. I see my cardiologist every 6 months, which is fantastic. That's pretty good. Yeah. And then I get my device read when I'm there in his office. And I guess I have been unpleasantly surprised how many recorded episodes of arrhythmia I have had. Mm-hmm. And that has been, I've had in the 3 years since my cardiac arrest, I've had about 75 recorded episodes of arrhythmia. And that's been a real sort of emotional blow. Mm-hmm. To realize, that I do have frequent arrhythmia. But my doctor has been fantastic about it. He says, well, your ICD reads those. He says, everybody else walking around on your block may also have that kind of arrhythmia. They just don't know because they don't have a device in their chest that reads it. Yeah. So that's been somewhat reassuring.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome when you talk to like a cardiologist or an electrophysiologist about ICDs, because When I first got mine, I had a bunch of fears like associated with it, and I was having trouble sleeping. And I remember one of my doctors said that when she said when I put in the ICDs, I actually sleep better. That's how confident I am in the fact that, you know, and how they, you know, save lives and keep people safe. And it kind of put it in perspective for me. I was like, okay, that, you know, makes me feel better that, you know, the doctor kind of feels like after they put this device in, you know, you're kind of ready to get back out there a little bit, which is nice.
Yes, that's good. Good.
Yeah. So going back to you, Alan. So I know you told us a little bit about the call push shock training, which is just so important. And obviously it shows the impact that you've had with the survivor rate going up the way it has. Can you just tell us a little bit more about some of the other programs that you guys do?
Sure. Be happy to. So we, in teaching so many thousands of people and particularly young students, we realized how very important it is for the public to be prepared. Mm-hmm. And so we started to work on what we call the Starting Hearts community. Mm-hmm. And this is made up of four elements. The first and most important really is education. And so, we learned that we were teaching more than just call push shock, that we were teaching particularly young people how to be leaders, how to have confidence, and how to make a commitment to help, how to build a team, for example, and delegate responsibilities. And we also realized that we were relying on materials that really weren't very age appropriate, that if we were using material from American Red Cross, American Heart Association, and these are certainly good materials, but really aimed at adults. And so we started to create a new curriculum that is completely age appropriate with classes starting for 5 to 8 year olds. Mm. That is an animation that comes with comic books and coloring pages. And then to build upon that, the next level, which is upper elementary, and then the next level, which is middle school, and finally high school, with the idea that if we could replicate the best practices that we have in our communities across the nation, we could really have a significant impact on positive outcomes. And so by the end of this year, we will have completed the entire age-appropriate curriculum. We have Dr. Janet Newman, who's a PhD in education, who is leading this process for us and doing a remarkable job. And we want to be able to share this with school districts literally across America in the coming years to teach an entire generation these leadership and life-saving skills. The second element of the Starting Hearts community is widespread placement of public access defibrillators. And we have found, for example, that defibrillator cabinets will say something like for professional use only. No, defibrillators are there in public for public use so that when someone is in need, a defibrillator can create that life-saving event. Yeah. So in our service areas today, we have about one defibrillator for every 130 citizens. We believe that is possibly the highest per capita anywhere in the world. And we want to see that happen across the nation. There's a statistic that we're about 30 million defibrillators short of what is needed in the country to have this infrastructure available. And so we're going to see, just like smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, that over the next decade or so, defibrillators are going to be placed everywhere.
Yeah.
The third aspect of our Starting Hearts community is citizen activation. And we use one of several different programs that are integrated with our 911 dispatch that notifies the public who are registered on this free downloadable mobile app when a cardiac arrest takes place nearby so that citizens can respond quickly to that event. And I've had it happen several times where I've received a notice and been on scene within 1 or 2 minutes and been able to provide some early care. And then finally, having stakeholder engagement is crucial, and that means the citizenry, the city councils, the county commissioners, the safety agencies, the schools, businesses, everybody on board to really be part of the solution. In our area, we are so very fortunate to have this wonderful support from all aspects of the community, and this results in really having the kind of preparation necessary to be able to respond quickly. And altogether, this is why we are seeing an improvement in save rates. And our goal is really to replicate these best practices across the nation. Yeah. And we are always interested in meeting people with the same type of passion that we have to share these ideas and take steps to make each community better prepared to respond.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible. I'll say, so on a couple notes about what you said, first of all, you know, with my, I have a nonprofit out here in Connecticut, and any way we can promote the work that you're doing out here, you know, I would love to do that. And specifically, you know, I'm really interested in this curriculum for young children, because one of the things that I feel is that we still have a lot of hesitation to help in certain parts of the country. People are afraid to do something wrong. People are not sure if they're qualified. And I strongly believe that if we can get, you know, kids as young as you're talking about some sort of training at a young age, that they'll feel empowered as they grow to help save lives, and there'll be less of that hesitation. Because I think we all know, like, and, you know, Betty's story and my story and a lot of the stories out there, like, you know, immediate CPR from a lay rescuer or a bystander is crucial, right? We can't rely strictly on an ambulance. We can't rely strictly on EMS, because they're incredible and they do incredible work, but they don't arrive instantly. So we need something to be done before they get there. So any way that we can promote the work that you're doing out here, definitely we'll continue that conversation.
Terrific. So in that regard, we talk, of course, to many paramedic organizations and individuals, and they tell us if they see someone on scene attempting any type of care, then they have hope. If they don't see any type of care, then they generally have a cleanup situation.
Yeah.
And so that citizen first responder is really crucial in that chain of survival.
Definitely.
It's just so very important. And so if we can really empower our children to be ready, to be able to have confidence, it makes a world of difference. And I've had many a teacher, a parent, or a student say to us, wow, you know, I can save grandpa, I can save mommy. And these little 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, it's amazing. They may not have the strength to do CPR properly, but they have the knowledge to be able to help adults do the mm-hmm. right thing.
Right.
So putting this education out there really can have a significant impact on outcomes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And you know, it's interesting you said, when I do a lot of CPR and AED instruction and teach the exact same thing, you know, about the EMS, when they see CPR started, when they arrive, they have so much hope that now with their expertise, they're going to be able to really bring this person back. And then, you know, like you said, the opposite of that is when they arrive, and even if they're there in 4 minutes or 5 minutes and nothing's being done, you know, the chances are just much slimmer. So that's great. So, so Betty, going back to you and just, you know, you had a really hard recovery from your cardiac arrest, but just based on our conversation before we started doing the interview, it seems like you're doing really, really well, which is great. And, I'd be curious to hear kind of what your life is like now, what your restrictions are, what you're doing physically, how you're doing mentally, and kind of how everything's going.
Yeah. I went back to work after 5 months, and I'm working as a speech therapist in the schools. And this happened in April, and I took the rest of the school year off and then had a 3-month summer. So I was very blessed to have that time to recover. I ride my bike is my big passion, personal passion. I ride a road bike here in the beautiful mountains of Colorado. And I got back on my bike that first summer after about 3 months. And I did have some proprioceptive issues, some, you know, like spatial awareness. And it took me a while to really feel like I was safe, but, you know, only a couple rides really. And of course, building up my strength, went back to work. And I just, you know, I told my team, I'm not there yet cognitively. Please don't let me drop the ball. You know, I was, in some ways really ready to go back to work, but in some ways I wasn't ready to go back to work. But it was a necessity and work is a blessing for me. So I did. But you know, I struggled with thinking and processing and memory for quite a long time. That first year, I couldn't go into a grocery store, really. It was just too much to process. I find myself standing in the middle of the aisle, kind of wondering where I was, what did I need? Mm-hmm. I was a little bit emotionally labile. I was a little bit hot-headed, quick to anger, kind of quick to frustrate. And I didn't have those sort of characteristics before that I really know of to that extent. So those pieces, fortunately, I had treated that in my practice as a speech therapist, those cognitive and memory issues. Very, very fortunate that I knew what I was dealing with and was really able to treat myself, with, especially with cognition and memory. But it's been slow. You know, I would say really it's been 3 years now. I really have begun feeling like myself really maybe just in the last year. Mm-hmm. So the first 2 years I was kind of a lot of brain fog, knew that I was forgetting things. I had some aphasia word search where I lost words, just couldn't quite spit it out what I wanted to say. But I've had to learn to be gentle with myself because my brain took a real big hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important for people to understand, like, you know, you had something really serious happen to you. And you survived it. And we all want to get back to this like normalcy. But it takes time. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take, you know, ups and downs. But I do think there is an opportunity for cardiac arrest survivors, heart disease patients, patients living with defibrillators to get back to a normal life. Obviously, there's going to be some restrictions. There's going to be some things that are a little different, but I do think that opportunity is there. But it's really important to take the time and really work on yourself, both physically and mentally, to make it happen.
Absolutely. And the sooner the better.
Yeah.
You know, the way brain synapses and all of healing works is the sooner the better and the more intensive, the better. I got signed right up into cardiac rehabilitation at our local hospital. That helped a lot. Everybody in there, everybody in my rehabilitation class, if you will, they were heart attack victims. Or heart disease victims, not sudden cardiac arrest. So different issues with regard to nutrition, lifestyle, blood pressure, those kinds of things. But that was very, very helpful to attend that cardiac rehab, you know, in a very safe way. I was monitored. I was able to get back to exercising and under the watchful eye of the nurse there and the monitoring system. You know, they had me all plugged in and Yes, I absolutely agree. I just read a statistic, though, last week that was really kind of disconcerting. And that's, you know, maybe a 10% survival rate with sudden cardiac arrest. Alan has those stats at his fingertips. You probably do, too, Mike. But of those who survive, you know, less than 1%, I read, actually get back to their life as it was before their cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
And that's completely dependent, I think, on the timing.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think there's a lot of factors that go into it for sure. And I think it goes back to, you know, what we were talking about with that sixth link in the chain of survival. I think there's a more of an emphasis on this because, you know, obviously we talked a lot about the CPR, the AED, the early care in the hospital, and then it doesn't end like when you go home from the hospital. And I think it's being talked about much more now. And resources are being laid out for patients. So I'm so happy to hear though that you you know, you're able to do some of the things that you love doing, and we just talked about you're going to be on the Peloton starting tomorrow, I think. So that's great. It's so great to hear that.
Thank you for the encouragement. And I wanted to follow up on what Alan said about the education piece with the Starting Hearts organization. I was very blessed to participate in some education of our students in the elementary school where I work last month. I was with Dr. Janet Newman of Starting Hearts and the team, and I went into the classroom starting in second grade. And I told my story. I had not really been ready to tell the students my story until then. So it took me a while to feel like I was, you know, brave enough to give my witness to what had happened to me in front of the kids. But it was great because they were able to really process all of the what if scenarios that, you know, well, what if such and such, what if I, you know, and it's frightening for them. I said, do not worry. You know, do not worry. The important thing is to begin the call, push, shock.
Yeah. That's awesome. I agree. It helps hearing from somebody that's gone through it. You know, it puts things in perspective, no matter the age too. Like I've do a lot of training and people still don't realize that a lot of times CPR class is something that you're like have to show up for, your boss tells you to show up for, like you're in a school, so your teacher tells you to show up for it. But when you have that real story, it puts it in real perspective for you, which is huge.
Absolutely.
So Alan, a couple last things about the organization. First of all, did we miss anything? I want to make sure that you had a chance to say everything and talk about all the amazing work you're doing. So did we cover everything?
Well, I can talk for hours on the subject. we have a pretty spectacular board, an advisory board. One of our board members is Dr. Morton Mower. He is the co-inventor of the implantable defibrillator.
Okay.
And he is a spectacular inventor who has literally saved millions of lives across the planet. And so we are a nonprofit. We work by donation. We turn that money back into every community we serve. And now we hope to extend the education literally across the nation for several decades to come. And we've set a goal. We believe that if we can simply recreate the save rate that we experience across the nation, that we could save as many as 100,000 people per year. Mm-hmm. And this is in the face of an environment in which cardiac arrest is worsening for two key reasons now. One is complications from the COVID virus. Mm-hmm. Another is the opioid crisis, which is creating so many more cardiac arrests. So in the nation today, we experience approximately 400,000 events per year. We are probably aimed in the near future of 500,000 events per year. If we could save 100,000 people per year, the impact on the nation is significant. And I think about the example in my own family where the trajectory of my life changed completely because of my father's death. Mm-hmm. You can imagine what happens to so many families who may lose a breadwinner. There's a statistic that suggests that every cardiac arrest costs our nation, not only in direct medical expenses, but in terms of lost earning power, more than $1 million per event. So multiply that by 400,000 per year and you get billions and billions of dollars in lost productivity. So we think that they're probably short of, say, a cure for cancer, that there's probably nothing more impactful we could do in American health than to save many more lives from cardiac arrest deaths. And again, those first few minutes, as you mentioned, at 4 minutes, we start to see brain damage. Mm-hmm. This being a 10-minute disease, because viability drops about 10% every minute. So that early care by the citizen responder can have such a huge impact across the nation. And that's what we really want to replicate. So we'd like to invite interested parties, passionate people who've had a direct experience, who would like to do something to help. We're excited to share these best practices, to build affiliations across the nation. We have a college program with the Alpha Phi Sorority. We're now on 6 college campuses, and we hope to be on 170 campuses in the next decade or so to bring these kinds of skills and knowledge and confidence to a college age population as well, along with the age appropriate education for youngsters up through high school. So yes, please reach out to us. Yeah. We are at 484-2550. That's an 800 number, or info@startinghearts.org. We would love to speak with other interested parties.
Definitely. Definitely. Cool. I'm on your website here, and I know you guys have like a newsletter. People can stay engaged. Really simple website, startinghearts.org. Anybody listening can very easily access. What about social media? Is there a way people can contact you on social media?
Sure, you bet. We're on all the platforms. So LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're there with posts every few days. So please join us there as well.
Awesome. And I can speak to this because I have an organization that we started and run and fundraise, and every piece counts, whether it's, donation. There's no donation that's too small. There's no way to support that isn't, necessary or needed. Anything helps. And whether it's helping spread awareness, whether it's donating money, spreading the mission, it all helps. And the more people we can get on board doing that, really the more lives we'll save from cardiac arrest. So
terrific. We really appreciate the support, Mike.
Definitely. And Betty, last question I have for you. And I ask all our survivors and patients this, and it is, if you could give if you were in the hospital with you, another cardiac arrest survivor, the day you kind of wake up and you're told you went into cardiac arrest and you have to navigate the rest of your life, if you could give someone in those circumstances one piece of advice, what would it be?
Seek counseling.
Yeah.
It's a lot to handle. It's a lot to wrap one's head around. Proceed, there were big issues around my mortality. And what do I want out of life? Just some of those, just the biggest issues that you can possibly imagine, as well as just, the changes that may happen in a person's life afterward that we have to adjust to. Mm-hmm. And my cardiologist was great when I told him that the emotional piece was the hardest for me. And he said, of course, it's your heart. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. the truth. So absolutely seek counseling to help manage the emotional aspect of really the trauma of having had a fatality and survived.
That's great. Couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. It's crucial. So awesome. Well, thank you both, Betty and Alan, for taking the time to do this, for sharing your inspirational stories. And, just again, thank you for the work that you're doing, because, as a patient, as a survivor, there's no doubt in my mind that, the more you keep moving forward, the more lives you're going to save. So thank you very much.
Thank you for all you do, Mike and Alan, as always.
Yes, and Mike, thank you for this wonderful forum. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. If you liked this episode, it would mean so much to me if you could give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Like anything in life, the goal is to improve. Please provide any feedback you have, any topics you want to hear, or any guests that can provide value to our listeners. you can message us on Instagram at A Big Heart Podcast, or send us an email at mike@inaheartbeat.org. To learn more about In a Heartbeat and the programs we provide, please visit www.inaheartbeat.org. That is www.inaheartbeat.org.